Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, folks, hello out there again. Hello to you people that are just now tuning in, the people that didn't get to listen to the first hour. I think we did a pretty good first hour. It was our second inaugural show. Well, we did our first show last week, our first show of Blood River Radio. And even though everything went wrong, almost everything went wrong that could go wrong, I guess the house could have been nuked, the studio could have been nuked, but that would have been about all that could have happened bad. Tonight, in the second hour, I'm bringing on one of my favorite people in the world. He's a brother in spirit, a brother in arms. His name is, I like to call him Mr. Marine Jeans. His name is I just call him straight up Gene. But he was, I wrote to Charlottesville with him. Y'all may have told me, I may have told y'all about that last week. But me and Gene, and we spent almost three days up there in Charlottesville, if you count riding from Cookeville, Tennessee. Gene is a, I'll get him to tell you a little bit about his bio in just a minute. He's a real deal Marine, folks. He's not one of these, powder puff Marines or powder puff Army guys. He's the real deal. He taught history in high school. But tonight, well, I brought him on because he's such a stand-up guy. You just can't find guys like that anymore. And we're going to talk about, we're going to try to do justice to a book called The Bad War by M.S. King. We're going to talk about some of the lies, just outright lies that were told in World War II, especially, well, actually going back to World War I, that were told about the Germans. The Germans were evil. They were monsters. They were child killers, you know, all that crap that we started the war, you know, that they started the war. And with that, y'all, I'm going to bring Gene. Now, Gene, come on, my friend, and give us just a little bio tonight before we get going.
Yes, sir. Eddie, glad to. Glad to help you out. Now, I was born and raised in Nashville. Grew up there. Went in the Marine Corps after I got out of college. Got a commission, second lieutenant, and served in Vietnam. Came back here to Nashville, and, after a couple of years bumming around playing minor league football, and underline the word minor. I never made it to the big time. And then started teaching for and coaching football and track for 14 years, and then started working with my brother with a sports medicine program in IndyCar racing, taking care of their drivers and crew members. And then the last 12 years, we covered the American Le Mans race series, which is the sports cars and endurance racing. And then I retired in 2012 and have been working down at the Nathan Bedford Forest Home, taking care of that historic site and doing renovation work down there and work on the grounds. And I've always had an interest in history, and especially in our war for Southern independence, and more specifically the Army of Tennessee, the Western Theater, and even more specifically than that, the campaigns of General Nathan Bedford Forrest. But over the last few years, I've really started reading some eye-opening history on World War II. And one of those books was Hitler's War by David Irving. And it tells it from the German standpoint and what they actually said. Not what we said they said, but what they actually said and what he got from phone records and diaries and things like that. And then another book, and I believe his name was Robert Stinson. The last name was Stinson, I'm sure of that. Was Day of Deceit, and we've always heard Day of Infamy about Pearl Harbor, but this is Day of Deceit and how Roosevelt lied and skipped the information over Admiral Kimmel and General Short on the Pearl Harbor and just left the American fleet there as sitting ducks, basically, in order to get us into a war. And he wanted a war with Japan so he could get a backdoor war with Germany and save his communist buddies. And then that leads us into M.S. King's book, The Bad War. And the cover of it is The Good War, and it's got the good covered up with bad on there. It says, The Truth Never Taught About World War II. And it is really an eye-opener because it goes back even prior to World War I to tell you a lot of the things that were going on in Europe and then how British propaganda and lies and misinformation suckered us into World War I, a war that we had no business being in. And because the United States got in there and literally won it for the Allies, then the Germans were totally just robbed at the Versailles Treaty, had their territory taken away from them, put these horrible reparations on them. And that was the whole point of suckering the Americans to come into that. The war was grinding down to a stalemate. And had it been that, a lot of the bankers that had financed the Allies, the Rothschilds and some of these other British banking houses, would have lost millions and millions of dollars. They weren't about to do that. They could care less about the soldiers, how many of them died, but they weren't about to lose a lot of money. So with the Americans thrown in there and Germany losing the war, they could demand reparations from Germany and recover their loans that they had made to the Allies, which, as most honest historians would say, actually set up World War II. So I think that's where we are, and we can get into discussing this the bad war and whatever part you'd like to delve into on that.
Well, people, I think you know by now why I was so tickled to have Gene owned. The man has just given you a lesson. It's going to make my job awfully easy tonight, Gene. Gene, I'm so glad that you went back to prior to World War One and prior to World War One. You know, the great novelist Tolstoy said something about, if I got my story straight, that the old Franco-Russian alliance back, what, about 1890?
Yeah.
He said that was just leading. He said it was a war agreement. What that was a deal with the devil. The devil's in the details. And he saw a future war. The whole thing, well, you're right. Gene is absolutely right. The whole World War One was and World War Two was set up years and years in advance. These people, these same old cabals that have been around forever, these international Zionists that run the world, if you call them globalists if you want to, call them Jews, call them Zionists, they're all one and the same. They think in terms of centuries. They really do. They're not like us. They think in terms of, you know, trying to make a check. But, you know, going back, I'm going to mention briefly some stuff before I go back to Gene. Prior to World War II, you know, and I'm going to mention something right after that. But prior to World War II, and I think it was in 1912, the International Zionist Jews, the World Jewish Congress met, and they said that they wanted to. There were seven goals that they wanted to establish. Now, get this, people. They met in 1912 and laid out these seven goals. And I think it's going to open your eyes. They said that they wanted to establish a central bank in the United States. That was in 2012. Well, in 1912. All right, well, in 1913, we had the Federal Reserve Act passed, so we got a central bank in.
Creature from Jekyll Island, where that bunch went down there and set that whole thing up?
It sure was with G.W. Griffin. G.W. Yeah. Griffin, Creature from Jekyll Island. You're right on the money. And if I can highly recommend, if you want to know all about the Federal Reserve, all about the money system, how it really works, I would recommend that book, Gene, of our audience out there. G.W. Griffin, The Creature from Jekyll Island. I'd love to get him on the show sometime. They also, and Pieces of Eight is another great book Sam was telling me about that you need to get. Edwin Vieira. Oh, Edwin Vieira. Yeah, Dr. Vieira. Yeah. People, we got to go to a break, but we're going to come back and continue this wonderful conversation with Gene in just a few minutes. God bless you, people. Thank you for listening to us tonight.
Is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Getting the kids to school, cleaning the house, doing the laundry. It seems that the work routine as a stay-at-home mom is never ending. And even though I'm the prime grocery shopper in our family of four, I simply don't have time to scrutinize all the labels on the countless food products I buy. Oh, sure, I've noticed all the latest certification seals. Organic, non-GMO, gluten-free. It definitely seems to be the latest craze. But it was only recently that kosher certification seals caught my attention. You see, my husband had me download an app called Kosher-tify, and it shed light on a century-old certification industry that slipped under the radar screen from the majority of our public. I also noticed a question mark at the end of the app name, and that makes great sense as there's far more questions regarding this industry than answers. In fact, the developers refer to this as the kosher question. Sure, I'm a busy mom and didn't pay attention to our food culture, but now I have transparency, a convenient grocery list feature, and the ability to eat in favor of my family's best interests, and you can discover it too at thekosherquestion.com.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
Well, people, we're back. We're getting ready to bring Gene right back on in just a minute. And we're going to go back to the same topic we were talking about. I was going to read these 7 points off that the World Jewish Congress came up with in 1912. Went over the first one was to establish a central bank in America. They came up with that in 1912. And lo and behold, 1 year later, in 1913, we got a central bank called the Federal Reserve, which is neither federal nor any part of the government. It's a private central bank. Okay, and it said also they want to establish a progressive income tax. In 1914, we got that. We got a progressive, heavy progressive income tax. They want to trigger World War I and World War II. This is in 1912 when they come up with this stuff, people. And I'm going to let you be the judge and see if they got what they wanted. They want to entangle America in world affairs in world wars. They said they were going to overthrow the Tsar in Russia because, you know, he was a Christian. The Tsar was a Christian. Have you ever heard of the Russian Orthodox Church? Okay, and they wanted to establish a Jewish communist superstate in Russia. Okay. They also want to establish a League of Nations, and they said that the League of Nations was going to be the first step, kind of embryo, if you will, of the future international Jewish New World Order. The seventh thing they wanted, the father of Zionism, they come credit with being the father of international Jewish Zionism, is a guy named Theodore Herzl. He wanted to establish an international Zionist world government, but he also wanted a homeland, an all-Jewish homeland in Palestine. And folks, we just said in the last hour, we talked about, Palestine no longer being really in existence. It's where this modern state of Israel sits. They went in there and just totally kicked out all those people there, all the Palestinians. And that's what we have now. It looks to me like that they got everything they wanted. Now, Gene, that was, like we were saying, that was prior to even World War One. And Gene, go back and take us to my, and also I didn't even mention the Balfour Declaration. Gene, do you know anything? If you know anything about the Balfour Declaration, clue us in on that fellow.
Well, yes, that was the deal that got us into World War One, and they promised that if we would enter, then Israel was going to get a homeland, or they would make a homeland for the Jews in Israel and just cut out the Palestinians, boot them out. That was take it away from the Ottoman Empire, Turkish Ottoman Empire. And so that was the whole plan behind all of that. All the deals that were cut were with that goal in mind. So, you know, we were, once again, old Uncle Sugar was set up again to fall into the trap. Let me, you know, going back to this, the bad war, if I could, for our listeners, just give them a couple of paragraphs for the from the introduction here. And so they'll get an idea how important this book is. Now, first thing about it, across the cover is a yellow stripe going banned by Amazon. So you know if it's banned by Amazon, it must be telling the truth. And this explains that. It says on March 7, 2017, after selling more than 10,000 copies and gathering 300 five-star reviews at Amazon.com, both the paperback and Kindle versions of this book were, due to outside high-level pressure, suddenly banned from the web page and the online retail giant. An email message was sent to the author, M.S. King. It read as follows: "We're contacting you, excuse me, regarding the following book, The Bad War, The Truth Never Taught About World War II. During our review process, we found that this content is in violation of our content guidelines. As a result, we cannot offer this book for sale." And then he says the book contains no calls to violence, no threats, no incitements to hatred, and no seditious language of any type. Moreover, in spite of what a few ignorant critics allege, the author, who is pleased to have more than a few Jewish readers among his fans, is not at all anti-Semitic, any more than a critic of the notorious Cosa Nostra crime syndicate can be described as anti-Italian. That alone is evidence of the truth presented in this book. So to me, as soon as I saw it was banned by Amazon, I knew they must be telling the truth, because Amazon and Google and these censorship news outlets that we have rush to ban anything that even hints at telling the truth about factual history. So just thought we'd get that out to our listeners and let them know why this book has been under attack, and Amazon pulled it. They don't want the truth out there. It's very simple.
You're killing it, Gene. You're absolutely are. That's so true. I mean, the lies are just so monstrous. And, you know, before I go back to the Balfour Declaration, I was going to briefly mention the Balfour Declaration.
Okay.
Now, if these people were not telling the truth, Gene, I mean, if our audience, all they have to do is ask, why are these international Jews, why are they fighting the release of these books with every ounce of strength in their body? If it was a clown's book, if it was laughable, if it could be easily disproved, even if it took work, but you could disprove the book, they would say, let it go, because the man's just going to make a fool out of himself. They're going to have egg on their safe, but that's not on their face. That's not the case. The book is dead on.
Oh,
and one more comment about the Balfour Declaration. I think you may have mentioned it, Gene. The British and the French were getting the crap beat out of them. People, not one foreign soldier had stepped foot in German territory.
Nope.
The war had grinded down. It was a stalemate. And the British were actually getting ready to come to talk peace with the Germans. But the international Jews, the kind people they are, they said, oh, no, no, no. Well, they went to see Lord Balfour in England. They said, look, you can still win this war. You don't have to give it up. Well, pray tell, how can we do it? They said, well, we can get America, the United States, into the war. And they said, well, how are you going to do that? And they said, don't you let us worry about that. If you will promise us the British mandate, and like Gene mentioned earlier, the British are going to give away land that didn't even belong to them. You know, the Jews, they're good at doing that. They were going to give away Palestine. The Jews wanted Palestine to make a Jewish state. No, you know, no Gentiles allowed, Jews only. And if the British would agree to give them that land after the end of the war, they would bring the United States into the war. They would guarantee it. And that's exactly what happened. That's what brought the United States into the war and killed thousands and thousands of our men. I have an uncle, a great uncle, who was gassed over there. That's what happens, people. It's just the poor goyim were used as cannon fodder, just like we was in World War I and World War II in Korea and Vietnam. We were nothing but stinking cattle, cannon fodder. Well, I just wanted to go back to make that brief comment on you know, the Balfour Declaration, which leads, you know, I've heard some people say, Gene, that World War II was kind of like the, I like it, liken it to a football game, was the second half of World War One.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll throw that back at you, Gene.
1A.
Yeah.
That's exactly right, because all the results of World War One brought on World War Two. I mean, and people say, well, how can you criticize the United States like that? How can you side with the Germans? How can you talk about how badly the Germans were treated? I'm a Southerner. I know how bad the Southerners were treated after our war for independence, which the Yankees miscall a civil war, which it wasn't. We weren't trying to take over the United States government. We were just trying to leave. So I know how propaganda can be turned against you, and lies, continuous lies are told about you, and you're vilified in the press, in textbooks, in all across the enemy's country. You're held up as some kind of monster to them, and you should have been invaded, and your people should have been slaughtered, and they should have used genocide against you. And so as a Southerner, I understand exactly what the Germans went through, being lied about and being used for propaganda purposes. And the Lusitania, that supposedly the sinking of the passenger ship with Americans on board that got us into the war, the Germans published advertisements, don't sail on that ship, it's an ammunition ship, and the New York papers wouldn't run it.
Gene, my buddy, with that, we've got to go to a break.
Yes,
we'll come right back. I want you to come right back and start on the Lusitania when we come back, my friend.
Claiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. Attention, Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin, just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had lessons.
Well, people, we're back again, and I certainly thank you for tuning in. I think you will have to agree that it's a lot better than it was last week when the computer crashed, but thanks to Sam doing working his magic, we got a pretty good show out. I went back and listened to it in archives. I will have to say so myself. The staff that I've handpicked, and Gene being one of them, I was just really thrilled at how well they did. They carried the ball across the goal line and then some, people. And Sam did a marvelous job getting eight people in and out through all those difficulties. How he'll do it, I'll never know. Gene, before the break, you were talking about the Lusitania. You know, that's a great point, a great false flag. Would you like to delve back into that before we move on to something else?
Lusitania was a passenger ship. And Germany had used submarine warfare to try to cut off supplies coming into Great Britain. And so what the British did, they started sending supplies, military supplies, rifles, ammunition, artillery shells on these passenger ships. And they knew what was going to happen, and the Germans knew it too. I mean, they had agents over here in this country. And before the Lusitania sailed from New York to London, or the coast there, British coast, they were going to run ads in the New York newspapers telling Americans not to sail on this ship because it's bringing arms to the British army, the British military, and when it got into British waters or close to Great Britain, they were going to sink it with their submarines. And the New York newspapers, who were controlled by the Zionists, they wouldn't run the ads until after the Lusitania sailed. That did a lot of good. What were people going to do, get a helicopter and get off and fly back to New York? So, sure enough, it got close to Great Britain, and it got torpedoed and sank. And then I've forgotten the number. Quite a few Americans were on board there, and they went down with the Lusitania. And, you know, this was used as propaganda. And they had a propaganda director here in the United States. The fellow's name was Edward Bernays, Bernays, the father of American propaganda. And he was a nephew of the psychiatrist Sigmund Freud. And Bernays boasted of his ability to control public opinion. And he called his scientific methods for controlling public opinion the engineering of consent. And he explained how he was going to do this, and he certainly did. And the Americans were duped into believing that the Germans were these vicious people, and that they were with the British propaganda of the Germans going through Belgium and bayoneting Belgian babies on the end of their bayonets on their rifles and all of this. They whipped up this anti-German sentiment in this country. Now, there have been divers in recent years that have gone down to the wreckage of the Lusitania with these deep water craft that they have now, like the ones that found the Titanic. And they have found millions and millions of cartridges that were in the hold of that ship. The British knew that it would be discovered someday, and I believe it was in the 1950s or 1960s they located the wreckage of the Lusitania. Their Navy went out there and sent depth charges down. They found out the depth of the Lusitania, and they dropped depth charges to blow up the evidence and try to destroy the evidence of what they had done to sucker America into World War One. They blew up a lot of the wreckage, but they didn't get all of it. So divers since then have found, you know, millions and millions of cartridges and ammunition that was being carried on the Lusitania. So that whole premise for us entering World War One was basically a British propaganda lie. And we went along with it, and Wilson went along with it, because he had been bought off by the banksters and the big money people, the Rothschilds, and so he was in on it too. And you know, he declared that. And it's interesting how these presidents get elected by campaigning on saying he kept us out of war, and then as soon as he gets elected for a second term, we go into a war. And the same thing with Roosevelt, that he ran keeping us out of war, and America was going to be neutral, and we weren't going to get involved in another European war. As soon as he gets elected again for that third term, second term, then here he goes, trying to do everything he can to get us involved in World War II. And then the one I got suckered into was in Vietnam, because I can remember in 1964 when Lyndon Johnson was running against Barry Goldwater, that Johnson came out and said, "Why, if you vote for that feller Goldwater, he'll get us in a war in Vietnam." And they ran that ad of the little girl out in the field picking petals off a daisy and going, "He loves me, loves me not." And then all of a sudden they showed this mushroom cloud exploding, and her picture turned from a positive to a negative, inferring that if Goldwater were elected president, he'd have his crazy finger right on the button to start a nuclear war. Well, as we all know, Johnson got elected in November in a landslide. He gets inaugurated in January of 1965. In March of 1965, the Marines are sent into Da Nang, and here it goes from there. So, you know, we get lied to every war we go into, ever since Dishonest Abe lied us into a war.
That's absolutely right. You know, one of our good buddies said that when history comes at you with the force of law, you know it's a lie.
Yeah.
And, you know, Napoleon said that history is a myth that men have agreed upon. You know, uh-huh. Well, the winners of the wars always write the history.
They always write
And going back, yes, they do. Gene, you're doing a marvelous job tonight, fella. I'm so glad you're here. You know, one more note about the Lusitania and, you know, that evil Churchill. See, Churchill sent that Lusitania out into areas, into waters, knowing where they knew the British Navy had already detected that there was, they're like great white sharks, that there was German U-boats in the area. They sent the Lusitania in the area of the German U-boats purposely, you know, with almost a certainty they were going to be torpedoed. And when they were getting into...
They had to have it.
Yes, they did. And you know what? Not only that, they withdrew the British Navy's destroyer escort. They most certainly did that. That is a fact. If you go back and you study history, they absolutely did that, no doubt about it. You know, and I guess going to back, I guess I'll shift back and forth. I'm noticed for that, going down rabbit trails, people have told me. But, you know, it's been said, Gene, going fast forward again, I'm going back and forth to World War II. You know, when Hitler came into, when he came into to power, before he was, actually before he came into power, the Germans were suffering this immeasurably. They were on starvation. The Allies were intentionally suffering us, starving them. They had taken their a lot of, you know, their industry. Tore their machines down. Shipped a lot of them to Russia. They were just in bad shape. It was said that Berlin, they were not only economic wise, but you know, morally wise. They said that it was Berlin was the decadent center of Europe, if not the world. You know, homosexualism was rampant, pedophilia. You just name it. You know, name your vice, and you could get it. The German people were down and out. They were selling themselves women for, you know, prostitution. It got even worse, believe it or not, in World War II. But when Hitler came in there, you know, a man asked Hitler, he said, "How did you think you were going to pull these people out?" Looking at how far the German people had sunk, how on earth did you have faith that you could bring them out of the gutter like that? And he said, "Well, I didn't see what they were. I saw what they could be." Well, when he came in, it was a miracle of economics. I mean, Adolf Hitler was the man of the Time magazine, man of the year, I think twice even.
Yes.
But he got the German currency became the strongest currency in the world. They built the Autobahns. He cleaned up the prostitution over there. He cleaned up all that decadent stuff. He would not allow, you know, filth being preached in the high schools there. And here's what really got him. Here's what got him. It said Adolf Hitler is the only person probably in modern times, when I say modern times, probably the past 150 years, that actually beat the globalists. He actually beat the Jew international banksters. For 12 years, Gene, he kicked out. He kicked out those Rothschilds, those international banks, banksters, Jewish international banksters, kicked them out of Germany, nationalized their banks. And that was the nail in the coffin of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. That's why the entire world, when I say the entire world, I mean the entire Jewish world. You know, Gene, the first shot, and I'll shut up a minute, the first shot fired World War II was in 1933. You got this book here, it says the first shot fired in March 24th, 1933. issue of the Daily Express published in London. The headline says, Judea declares war on Germany. And in 1933, the World Jewish Congress, meeting in New York City, declared war upon National Socialist Germany, economically and financially. This is no figure of speech, but it's true. That's exactly what happened. They declared war. Now, shut up. I'll go back to you, Gene.
No, I'm looking at that newspaper, Daily Express. Judea declares war on Germany. Jews of all the world unite in action against Germany. 40,000 protest in a rally in New York against Hitler. So they declared war on Hitler before the first shot was ever fired in World War II.
They sure did.
Let me just tell you a story to show
you. Gene, we've got to go to a break, fella. I hear the music coming up. We've got to go to another break. We're going to bring you right. Hold that thought, Gene. We'll be right back after this break.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way. But actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
If Planned Parenthood were what they publicly declare themselves to be, they would welcome transparency. We all know why they hide, because we know what they hide. We can confirm federal judges who follow the Constitution rather than reverse engineer their preferred policy outcomes. The truth about abortion is spreading because of advances in medical imaging, because of brave journalists, tireless activists, compassionate doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals. The rising generation of young Americans is the most pro-life in decades, because they know too. And one day soon, we will reaffirm our nation's principles in their dignified fullness and avow once again that all men are created equal. All are entitled to life.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
TalkRight, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. TalkRight makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download TalkRight today from Google Play or the App Store.
My day has just been made by having this radio show and trying to serve my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ in the best way I know how, the only way I know how. It may seem a little weird to y'all. It may be a little unorthodox in our ministry, but I do consider this radio show a ministry. I have people that are hardcore Christians like Gino, who's also brilliant. He's one of the smartest men I've ever known. And I haven't known him that long, but I tell you what, You can tell him right quick, like you can tell somebody who's the real deal. Gene, go back in a minute. In a minute, I'm going to go back and talk about how Germany invaded Poland, so to speak. Now, go back to the point you were making.
Okay, I want to tell a story to our listeners that I didn't become anti-establishment and anti, you know, the politically correct version of history all in one day. This started for me way back in 1965. I ran track at the University of Georgia. I track coach was Forrest Speck Towns. And every year before we would start the outdoor season, which is usually down at the Florida Relays, Coach Towns and Mrs. Towns would have the track team over to their house for a cookout. And we were standing around talking, and he said, you know that story you've always heard about Adolf Hitler and how he wouldn't shake hands with Jesse Owens because he won a gold medal and that threw off their story about the Aryan race? He said, that was a lie. That was a lie. What actually happened was that Germany put on the 1936 Olympics in Berlin to show how Hitler had actually pulled Germany out of the Depression. Now, the United States and Great Britain were still stuck in the Depression, but Hitler had completely turned Germany around. Their economy was booming. So they hosted the Olympics, and the Jews were demanding that the United States boycott the 1936 Olympics. Much to the credit of the U.S. Olympic Committee, they didn't do it. So in the opening ceremony, whether you're Chancellor of Germany, King of England, President of the United States, you have this little speech that you have to read, welcome the athletes of the world to the Olympic Games. I now declare the games of the 12th Olympiad or whatever it was open. And that's it. That's all you can say. So Hitler did that. He went up to the VIP box. They didn't have all the opening ceremonies of people dancing around. This is the wind. This is a tree and all this nonsense like that. They just started the competition. The first athlete to win a gold medal was a German. So they are so excited that this German boy won a medal that Hitler goes down to the victory stand there. They present the gold medal. Hitler steps up and shakes hands with this German boy for winning the gold medal. Then they present the silver and bronze, and he shook hands with the silver medalist and the bronze medalist too. The next day, this was on August 2nd, the next day, August 3rd, the Olympic Committee calls Hitler in and tells him, you can't do that. You can only read that opening speech, and then the medal presentation at the victory podium has to be by the Olympic Committee only, nobody else. And he said, now you can take the German athletes over and celebrate all night long over in some part of other part of Berlin if you want to, but you can't do it at the Olympic site. And Hitler actually apologized to the Olympic Committee. He goes back to the VIP box. Who wins the next medal? Jesse Owens. Hitler can't go down and congratulate him. And then it started raining, and the news media said that Hitler wouldn't congratulate Jesse Owens because he wasn't part of the Aryan race, and he stomped out of the stadium. Well, yes, everybody left the stadium because it started raining. They went underneath the stands. The rain shower passed over. They went back up into the stands. But you didn't get that in the news media. And Coach Towns knew exactly what he was talking about because not only was he there and saw this, he was a member of the United States Olympic team, and not only was he a member, he won the gold medal in the 110-meter hurdles where he broke the Olympic record and tied the world record. So that was my first inclination to the fact that, you know, the news media will lie to you, and they will make up propaganda, and fake news is not a recent phenomenon.
I was going to say, that's what I was going to say, Gene. I'm wondering, is there anything that they won't lie about, that these Zionists will not lie about to try to get their way?
Yeah.
You know,
they were doing everything they could to vilify Hitler and make him seem like some kind of two-headed monster, that he wouldn't shake hands with this poor, poor Negro athlete from the United States because he wasn't a member of the Aryan race. Wasn't a question at all. And Jesse Owens actually said that he was treated better in Germany, in Berlin, than he was in the United States. He could ride on any kind of bus or trolley or anything he wanted to in Berlin. He couldn't do that in New York or cities in the north in the United States. And then when he got back over here, they went to work on him and told him, you know, if you want to get invited to these big media events and things like that, here's the story you need to go with. So he actually changed his story when he got back to the States.
Well, he saw which side his bread was buttered on. You know, these sociopaths, Gene, they project their own pathological personality traits on other people. You know, that's all they are. They're worse than sociopaths. They're just straight up evil, and they hate us. They've been against us since the Garden of Eden. Another point I'd like to go to, Gene, I hope we have time. You know, we've often heard it, and I'm sure you heard it when you were in grammar school, and I heard it. And, you know, the European war started, Second World War, when Hitler and Germany invaded Poland. But, and M.S. King makes this point. You know, Russia, the Soviet Union, invaded Poland too. Russia and Germany had a mutual non-aggression pact at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Russia invaded, the Soviet Union invaded, took half of Poland.
They took
Germany took
half. And Germany, the only reason Germany went in was because the German citizens that were living in this country that was created after World War One, they were being brutalized by the Poles. You talk about a Holocaust. These people were being murdered and beaten and attacked and their businesses and homes taken away from them. They were begging for England and France to step up and do something about it. And finally, Hitler said, well, if you're not going to do anything about it, we'll protect our German citizens. And so Hitler told England and France ahead of time they were going into Poland to protect the German citizens. And that lying snake Churchill that had been bought out by the Zionists and sold his soul to them because he was so drunk and so mismanaged his money, he was about to lose his family estate. And they bailed him out, and so now they had him, they had a chain around his neck, so every time they jerked it, Churchill did what they wanted. So he told Poland, they cut a deal with Poland, you keep provoking Germany, and if Germany attacks you, we'll defend you, we'll declare war on Germany. So that's what the Poles did. Now, how were England and France going to protect Poland? To protect Poland, they'd have to march through Germany. You know, I mean, anybody that can look at a map can figure that one out. So.
That is so true. And, you know, a lot of what the history books also leave out is, I think you alluded to it earlier in the first of the hour, you know, after the First World War, the criminalistic Versailles Treaty, the parts of Poland and Czechoslovakia, there was land that had been stolen from Germany at the end of the First World War.
Yes,
so the land in Poland where all these Germans were being brutalized and murdered was actually at one time a part of Germany. And Gene is absolutely right. It was a Holocaust going on there, almost as bad as what they're going on in South Africa right now.
Yes,
and another point, they talk about Gene, the news in the history books say, oh, Germany, they invaded Poland, you know, and the Germans were just this evil beast and just devil themselves. But yet. You know, Stalin and the Russians were like saints. Gee, I wonder if any of that has to do with the time the Soviet Union had been totally beat down and submissive by the international Jewish communists.
Well, they said that 78% of the Bolsheviks were Jews. So it was the Bolsheviks, and that's why Hitler wanted the Jews out of Germany. He didn't want them sent to concentration camps. He didn't want to have them killed or anything. He just wanted them out of Germany because the Bolsheviks were starting these revolutions in Hungary, in Italy, in Austria, all over Europe. And he didn't want that going on. And in fact, they even tried in Germany after World War One. And luckily, the German, I guess they'd call it National Guard now, but the German soldiers that had come back from World War One were able to defeat them and drive them out of Germany. And so, that's what Hitler saw as the fifth columnists in Germany. That were trying to collapse Germany from the inside, and that's why he wanted them out. The bankers, the news media, the entertainment industry, it was all slanted against Germany by the Jews. And in the 1930s, the big film industry was in Germany. It was not in Hollywood. Hollywood was just a dusty little podunk town out on the outskirts of L.A. The big film industry was in Germany, and so much of that was controlled by the Jews and what they produced and what they were in control of with the news media and the entertainment industry. And that's why Hitler thought that was poisoning the mind of the German people. And we've always seen those pictures of Germans burning books, and they were talking about how terrible the book burning was in Germany. They weren't burning Aristotle and Faust and all of these books like that. They were burning pornography. That's what they were getting rid of.
That's what we need to do in this country here. People say, oh, censorship. You're damn right, censorship. I get all that filth out of this country and burn all that crap along with that Babylonian Talmud. You know, you're absolutely right. You know, if you'd ever like to see a wonderful, wonderful movie, a clean movie, go in and pull up, if you still get a Triumph of the Will. That was a movie made in the 30s about the revival, the rebuilding, the miracle rebuilding in Germany after the First World War, and also the Birth of a Nation here in the United States.
Yep.
Well, people, I cannot believe this this genius, this hour has gone already. I'm going to let you go, fella. But we'll have to continue this on in another time. I'd like to thank you so much for tuning in tonight. I'd like to thank both of my guests coming in and helping me out. And for me, for Gene, for Sam, for Matt, for everybody, good night. God bless you. Please keep us all in your prayers so this show will succeed. Thank you so much now. Good night, everybody.